If you love the History Extra podcast, make sure you follow us to keep up to date and get all the latest episodes. Thanks for your support, and I do hope you enjoy this episode.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/History Extra. Just go to Indeed.com/History Extra right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
This is not the sound of a stream running through the mountains. It's water from a leaking pipe trickling down a stairway. That's not a frog splashing into a lake. It's a piece of sheetrock falling into a puddle on a kitchen floor. And that's not a hiker taking a deep breath of mountain air. It's a homeowner gasping at the sight of a $12,000 water damage repair bill. 40% of homeowners have experienced water damage. Protect your home with the Moen Smart Water Monitor and Shutoff. Moen.
Elevate every morning with Tommy John's Second Skin Underwear. The luxurious support of Second Skin guarantees everything will go smoothly. With over 20 million pairs sold and thousands of five-star reviews, guys love Tommy John. Plus, your most valuable assets are covered with Tommy John's best pair you'll ever wear or its free guarantee. Shop Tommy John's Friends and Family Sale right now and get 25% off site-wide at TommyJohn.com/Spotify. TommyJohn.com/Spotify. See site for details.
When we see the photos in color, we can kind of create a bridge between the past and the present, and we can feel more intimate and related to the people and the events that we are seeing.
Colorization adds something that's both dangerous and powerful to history, and that, you know, history we often think of as an analytical discipline, and color adds emotion. Like an emotional response.
That was Dan Jones and Marina Amaral talking about how colourised images can give us an insight into history.
You're listening to the History Extra podcast from BBC History Magazine. We're the UK's best-selling history magazine, available in print and several digital formats all over the world. Find out more at historyextra.com/subscribe. Or look out for us in your digital newsstand or app store.
Hello and welcome to the History Extra podcast. I'm Rob Attar, the editor of BBC History magazine. One of this year's most high-profile and distinctive book releases has been The Colour of Time, which chronicles the history of the world from the mid-19th to mid-20th century, using 200 photographs that have been painstakingly colourised by the Brazilian artist Marina Amaral. The images are accompanied by a narrative written by the best-selling popular historian Dan Jones. Marina paid a visit to the UK earlier this year, and she and Dan met up with our digital editorial assistant, Rachel Dinning, in a bookshop in London to discuss their innovative project.
Hi, Marina and Dan. It's nice to have you on the podcast.
Thank you for having us.
You're very welcome. So this book that you've written together, it's tells the story of the world from 1850 to 1960 through this beautiful range of colourised historical photographs. It covers a broad span of history and a broad range of locations. So we've got Queen Victoria, we've got the birth of the Raj, we've got the moment Howard Carter discovered Tutankhamun's tomb, or opened it up rather. So starting with you, Marina, I mean, you're the digital colourist. What started this passion of yours?
So my mother is a historian, so I actually grew up seeing her always surrounded by books and watching documentaries and movies all the time. And she never kind of forced me to read the books and watch the same documentaries that she was watching at the time, but I think it was kind of natural for me to follow her path. And since I was really young, I always loved history. And I had a blog in 2015, and I needed someone to create some graphic images for me to use there. So I didn't know anybody, and I had to teach myself how to use Photoshop in order to create the images that I needed. One day I found a collection of World War II photos in color in a history forum, and I decided that I wanted to try to reproduce the technique. And at that point, I had no idea what I was doing. I kind of spent a lot of time exploring the software and trying to understand how I would be able to reproduce the same effect, and trying to figure out what should be the best tool to do that and the best Photoshop tool to do another thing. And eventually I was able to develop my own techniques and create my own workflow and feel comfortable with the way I was doing things. Then my work went viral on the internet and I became a digital colorist. So it was not planned at all.
And what was the moment you went viral? Was it a particular photograph?
Yeah, it was the photograph of Lewis Powell, one of the conspirators of the assassination of President Abraham Lincoln. And it was how Dan found me in 2015, I guess.
Yeah. I think it was, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it was 2015.
So, Dan, tell us a bit about, how you came across Marina's work.
Like many writers, I spend quite a lot of time procrastinating. And in that sense, social media is a godsend because it's an unlimited form of fascinating things that are not the fascinating thing you're supposed to be doing. And I was writing, a book about the Templars, and I was sort of lurking on Twitter, and I saw people retweeting the photo Marina just mentioned, which is a portrait taken by Alexander Gardner in 1865 of Lewis Powell, part of John Wilkes Booth's conspiracy to kill Lincoln. And it kind of looks like a GQ cover or a sort of one of the photos my children like of the boys from One Direction. It has an incredibly modern 21st century sensibility, which is partly coincidental and I think partly deliberate. It's a mugshot. It's a great photo in black and white by Gardner, who was one of the great, preeminent photographers of the American Civil War, but colorized. I mean, I can still remember the experience of seeing it for the first time, where Marina's caption, explained that it was from 1865, and yet it looked so modern. And there's a strange sort of, kind of short circuit something in your brain to see people, not necessarily images, but people from that age in color. It just sort of punches through the wall. That's often there in black and white. And so we got in touch, or I got in touch with Marina on Twitter, and we just started talking. And I suggested that, first of all, I wondered when she was doing a book, and she said she wasn't. So I suggested to Anthony Cheatham, who's the chairman of Head of Zeus, who are the publishers of my books and this book, that he should sign Marina before someone else did. And fortunately, Anthony listened to my advice and suggested that we do a book together. And I thought, yeah, fine. That'll be,
6 months.
I thought it would be 3 months.
This is a short project.
When I'm on the train, I'll just bash out these captions. But of course, it turned into a 2-year project, really, a little more, because the amount of work that we've put into creating a book that is more than just a selection of colorized photographs. That would have been great because Marina is great. But a book that is a selection of photographs that tells a story, that tells a global history, that functions both as a book that's beautiful to open and look at and to read at any given page, but can also be read from start to finish as a history of the world, from the Crimean War to the Cold War, from the Steam Age to the Space Age. Like that, that was weirdly quite a lot of work.
Well, I read you've looked at something like probably around 10,000 photos, and there's 200 photos in the book, so that must have taken a considerable amount of narrowing down.
It was horrible. It was really awful, yeah.
What was your process, Marina? What makes a good photo for you?
It really depends. I'm always interested by the history behind the photo, so that's the first thing that I think when I'm selecting the images. But in this case, we had to think about the technical aspects as well, because we needed to print them and to enlarge the photos and see them in various sizes. So we had to consider many aspects that I usually don't, because my work is published on the internet, so I don't have to pay a lot of attention to this. And that's what made the whole process a lot difficult, because we had a list of topics that we wanted to cover in the book, but it was so hard to find photos to cover each of these subjects. So Dan had a lot of trouble trying to conciliate both things. Yeah.
Well, I think part of the selection, how do you sit down and design a book like this? Last time we were doing the podcast, I was talking to you about story architecture and book architecture, and a massive part of this book was of my role in this book, because Marina's really the genius, but my role was to kind of create a superstructure so that this was a story rather than a series of random images, that in those 200 beats you got a meaningful story that wasn't just totally Eurocentric or European and American, that wasn't male dominated or dominated by big white men with enormous bushy beards, although inevitably there are some of those. That was the fashion for a long period. So it had to be a global history. It had to be a history in which the pictures could work sequentially. And then, you know, I had to learn Marina's, or some part of Marina's craft, and say, okay, I'm looking at, let's say, what have we got around us? We want a photo about the birth of aviation. Which photo of the Wright brothers, who, let's say, you know, would be the natural topic, is going to tell that story as a photo? But then which one is going to colorize? And I don't know that. Yeah. I'm not an artist. I once got 8 out of 10 for a picture of a dog I'd done in school. Like, that's the limit of my artistic sensibility. Marina has a brilliant artistic sensibility. But there's a big technical side that we had to start appreciating. If there aren't enough pixels in this image, it's not going to reproduce properly in the book. If it's not of a certain quality, it's not going to colorize properly. Just a lot of technical stuff to consider. And if one photo went wrong for a technical reason, then I'd be standing looking at my nice cork board, which I told you about in the other podcast, which had a whole chapter arranged in it, thinking, well, that whole chapter's just fallen to pieces, because that was the photo I was relying on to anchor it. And when that happened, I'm not given to fits of pique or temper, but I would become irate in my own little way. Not with Marina, I hasten to add.
Just with the world, of the project.
With the vastness of the universe and the fact that it appeared to be conspiring against me.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/History Extra. Just go to Indeed.com/History Extra right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Elevate every morning with Tommy John's Second Skin underwear. The luxurious support of Second Skin guarantees everything will go smoothly. With over 20 million pairs sold and thousands of 5-star reviews, guys love Tommy John. Plus, your most valuable assets are covered with Tommy John's best pair you'll ever wear or its free guarantee. Shop Tommy John's Friends and Family Sale right now and get 25% off site-wide at TommyJohn.com/Spotify. TommyJohn.com/Spotify. See site for details.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Free samples, free shipping, and our 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step and into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
there's that phrase, isn't there, that a picture tells 1,000 words. What do you think that adding colour to an image brings to someone looking at it? How does it aid in our understanding of that time period? What do we get from a colour image that we don't get from a black and white image?
I think it's much easier to relate to the people and the historical events after we see them in color, because we live in a colorful world, so we are used to seeing everything color and vivid colors. And when we look at the black and white pictures, we kind of feel that that thing is old, so it's hard to create a connection and really understand what is going on. So I think when we see the photos in color, we can kind of create a bridge between the past and the present, and we can feel more intimate and related to the people and the events that we are seeing. Yeah, and that's basically what I try to do with my work, yeah.
Do you have anything to add to that, Dan?
I've always got something to add, Rachel. I think that colorization adds something that's both dangerous and powerful to history, and that, you know, history we often think of as an analytical discipline. And colour adds emotion, like an emotional response. Yeah. And the natural criticism to that is that this can be distorting and it can be in some senses quote-unquote untruthful. But the advantages from eliciting an emotional response from people who look at these incredible pictures of marinas is that you are drawn, whether you like it or not, into this story. And, you know, the listeners to this podcast, notwithstanding, it is difficult to get people interested in history in a sort of broader sense. It's not, of course, it's not impossible, but it is a task. And the normal criticism is that history is boring. Well, this shatters that. You know, you just have to look at any of the... We're sitting in Waterstones in Piccadilly and there's a whole bunch of the photos on the walls around us. And you just have to look at any of them and suddenly you're drawn to the incredible humanity that was always within this image that Marina's just sort of lifted to the surface.
And it separates the 100 years that might be between you and that person in that photo. It just feels... Yeah, I completely can get that feeling. It's not... Colorizing historical photos isn't without its criticisms. I think you mentioned, like, there's a few people who say that it's creating a lie because you might not necessarily know what color, you know, what colors that person was wearing, and history's about fact. What would your response be to that, Marina?
First of all, there is a lot of research involved. So to create this book, we had to reach out to many historians and experts to make sure that we were covering as many details as we could in each picture and making sure that we had all the information that we needed to reproduce the original colors, the accurate colors. And sometimes I have to make artistic choices, but... Every time someone says that I'm faking history or creating something that is not true, I always think that the photographer who took the picture, he was seeing the events in color and he registered the scenes in black and white because he didn't have the technology to register the people and the events in color as he was seeing them. So what I try to do is to offer a different perspective and try to give people the opportunity to see history from a colorful and more real perspective, because that's how the world is. History was never black and white. And we always have, can come back to the original photos. They're not damaged in the process. So if we can have both, I don't know why we have to choose one or another.
Yeah, and you've almost added the truth back in, because like you said, the photographer, if he'd had access to technology.
Probably, maybe
not always, but would have taken a color photo.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, all of this debate has gone on in history. I mean, well, since I was a kid, when I was in my teens, Richard Evans had published a book called In Defense of History. And there's a big sort of kind of historiographical argument going on about the limits to which history could ever be objective, and a sort of postmodernist critique of history, often parodied, but there nonetheless, that all history was subjective and therefore invalid. And this is just another version of that same argument, which is to say that all history is about taking a sort of morass of fact and and corralling it into some shape, which is in and of itself an artifice. It's artificial. That is the job of the historian, to bring an artificial order to a random selection of events. And this is it in visual form. Now, I have no objection whatsoever to people saying, I don't like this, it ain't for me, I want to see the black and white image because I feel that this is adding something that wasn't there in the first place and it's not restorative. Fine, you know, don't buy the book. Or, you know, we can go and photocopy it and in black and white. You know, I mean, I'm being facetious, but it's fine. That's totally fine. And as Maureen says, the original black and white images have not been destroyed. But in our roles as historians, as particularly as public historians, I think there is a degree of onus on us to do what I call outreach, which is to bring history to people who would otherwise pass it by. And the evidence of our own eyes, in more than one sense, tells us that people respond to this and they get interested in history where they might not otherwise have been. And for me, that's like, in that case, the ends justify the means. And at no point are we going around pretending that this is something that it is not, that it is, I don't know.
Well, it's interesting you said that, because just before we started this interview, a nice man came in to have a copy of the book signed, and he said, oh, my two sons, who I think were 10 and 13, really loved this, and it's nice to hear that it's something that makes history interesting for children.
Yes, he was a very nice man for saying that, wasn't he? He went up in my estimation. no, but I think that you couldn't say anything that would make me happier, because if this gets particularly, you know, there's a vulnerable age with regard to being interested in history that's often in your teens, and that's the point at which you meet people much later in their life, and they go, when I was a teenager, history was so boring, I gave it up, and then usually or often don't come back until they're retired, you know, hit middle age. That's a lot of your life lost to, you know, or cut off from history, which we of course think is marvellous. So if someone says, this has got my kids into history, yeah, please, thank you, God, this is great, this is exactly, thank you, Marina, not God, they're not that far removed. Thank you for saying that. There couldn't be a better piece of praise.
So,
except for the endorsement of BBC History Magazine.
Of course. I think, seeing as this is a podcast and we'll have people listening to this who can't actually see any of the images in front of them, they might be in their car or at the gym, whatever takes their fancy, it might be nice to actually, let's describe some of the images. Let's talk about some of the images specifically. So, Marina, I know this is going to be such a challenge, but can you pick maybe a couple of images from the book that really, really speak to you in some way, and just tell me a bit about them?
I think we have one of Queen Victoria that is quite different, because we can see her using a white dress, and that's kind of unusual, because the image that we have in mind when we think of Queen Victoria is the old lady using black dresses.
Yes.
So that one was really interesting to put on the book, because we are giving people the opportunity to see her from a different perspective. Like I said, it's a young woman, he looks amazing, and the dress is stunning, and is very different from the image that we have in mind. So that one is really, really interesting for me. What do you think?
Well, let's think of a picture that a lot of the listeners of this podcast might have seen in its black and white form. So let's take Margaret Mother by Dorothea Lange, one of the most famous photos of the 20th century. And it's of a migrant farm labourer called Florence Owens Thompson, who was with her children at the side of the road because her car had broken down during the Dust Bowl, sort of Great Depression era in the US. And you'll have seen the photo, because it's a very close crop of her face with two of her children either side of her face. And she's sort of looking into the middle distance, and a look of sort of haunting distress on her face, and her children sort of burying their heads. And it was partly taken for the purpose of showing the effect that the Dust Bowl, the Great Depression, was having on ordinary Americans. And in black and white, it's an incredibly piercing, very, very, very powerful image. And the reason I mentioned it is and this touches on something we've talked about already. In colour, it takes on another life, and it's almost like another layer of emotional intensity into what's already an incredibly affecting and moving photograph is there. Now, it's also one of the photos that I was most conflicted about when we put it in the book, because it's so famous in black and white. It's such a famous, it's an iconic image of the 20th century, and to change it so substantially makes you think, wow, what are we doing to a great piece of art here? Is this vandalism, or is this a valid process? And I think that's an interesting sort of thought process to go through. And it's a good test case, firstly, for whether you actually like colorization, but also for bringing to the front of your mind what is being done here and what is its historical purpose, its historiographical purpose. For me, it was one of the most interesting images from a purely sort of ethical point of view within the book. I think it succeeds. I also absolutely adore Dorothea Lange's original photograph, which was in the Barbican in London recently. So in that sense, it's also a good example of the fact that, yes, this has been colourised, but guess what? Yeah. Dorothea Lange's photo is still there, and you can appreciate both versions of it.
I wanted to ask you, Marina, some practical questions about the actual process of colorizing.
Okay.
How long does it actually take you to do? I mean, is this how long is a piece of string?
It really depends on the photo. It can take me, a simple portrait can take me 40 minutes, and a more complex photo can take me 5 days or even weeks of work. So it really depends. We had some in the book that took me probably almost a week to complete, while others I did in 2 hours maybe. So it really depends on the amount of details that you have in the photo.
There's obviously some very difficult photographs in the book. You've got pictures, of, from inside concentration camps. And was it difficult working on those pictures, for staring at these, and there's a graphic image actually of, is it Mussolini? When just after he's been killed. And I mean, what's it like to look at those kind of photos? Was it difficult?
It is, because it's impossible to keep looking at these photos for so many hours and don't create an emotional attachment to the subject. I always, when I'm colorizing, I'm always thinking on what kind of life they led or what happened to them after the photo was taken. And it's really impossible to stare at their faces for so many hours and don't feel connected to what I am seeing. And the Holocaust photos were particularly difficult. We had another one in the book that we decided to drop because it was too graphic, and we didn't want to be shocking people too much, but at the same time, we wanted to show what really happened. So it was kind of difficult to choose the right photo, but I think the one we have in the book, it's kind of iconic, and it looks even more disturbing in color.
Yeah, we've just been talking about the ethics of aesthetics, if you like, about what's right to colorize and what's not right to colorize. There's also the ethics of what can or should you include in a history of these times. And there were some photos that were just too, I just felt that they were too much. I didn't want to. There have been some people have read the book and said, oh, my goodness, this is just very depressing, isn't it? Well, guess what? Let me tell you what happened between 1850 and 1960. There's a very fine line to be trodden, particularly in a book that's so visual and so essentially graphic, as to what can or should we show. And there's no answer. There's no, there is no rule book. You just have to sort of trust your instincts that we're pushing about as far as we can. And that I think that's particularly acute in this book because of what we've been talking about, the way that colorization humanizes, brings these images so much closer emotionally to the viewer, that you have to be really, really careful with how graphic and horrible some of the images we include are, without trying to sort of sanitize a history which is important specifically because of the horrors contained within it.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the more positive images in the book that evoke?
My byline photo is... sorry. that was too deadpan.
I felt like you thought of that answer a little too quickly for my liking.
I've just been thinking about that all day. I think the images of the sort of technological advances and change and the birth of air, flight, aeroplanes, space flight, electrification of transport, the building of incredible monuments like the Statue of Liberty in Corcovado in Rio.
Yeah.
We're looking at one just here in Waterstones, which is of Scott's expedition to Antarctica. Absolutely stunning photo taken through a sort of glacial structure. The exploration and advances in travel and technology during this period, but equally as thrilling, or thrilling in equal measure to the horror of the sort of war, imperialism and upheaval.
Yeah, and what is interesting is that we can see how the technology improved over time. As you go flicking through the pages of the book, you can see how the quality of the photos is changing. So you can kind of perceive how the technique and the way people took the photos was improving over time. And that's a really interesting part of the book for me as well.
So it's almost a history of how photography progressed in a way, even though that's not directly what it's about.
Yeah, and that's a sort of a thread through the book that's deliberately there. So that, the first photo of within the main run after the front matter, where there's a couple of photos, is of Roger Fenton turning up in, great photographer of the 1850s, turning up in the Crimean War with his horse-drawn darkroom, which had been converted from a wine merchant's wagon, which he was going to then sort of ride around the Crimea, taking these incredible images. And the reason that's up there at the very start of the narrative is because, in a sense, although this sort of is slightly below the surface, this is also a history of photography. And so you go from Roger Fenton and the sort of the greats of the 1850s all the way through to the Life magazine photographers of from 36 onwards, the Eisenstadt and Margaret Bourke White and Kappa and these absolute legends, and this incredibly brilliant Dorothea Lange, who we've already mentioned. There's an element which is a history of photography as well.
That was Dan Jones and Marina Amaral. The Colour of Time is out now, published by Head of Zeus. And that's about all for today, but do listen in on Thursday when we'll be talking about Napoleon with Adam Zamoyski.
Thanks for listening to this History Extra podcast, which was produced by Jack Fletcher. Do let us know what you think about this episode by emailing podcast@historyextra.com. And we might read out your messages in future editions. Alternatively, why not keep in touch via Twitter or Facebook, where you'll find us at History Extra. For more great history content, don't forget to visit our website, historyextra.com, which is full of history articles, quizzes, image galleries, and more. Plus, it's where you can download hundreds of previous episodes of this podcast.